I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into The Memo for this Wednesday, July the 20th, 2016. Brad Locke here with you, joined by...
Derek Russell.
Yes, that's right. That's Derek Russell. What happened to your voice, Derek?
I'm just a little under the weather today, Brad, so I sound more...
Feminine
than usual.
Oh, hey. That is actually Emma Kent.
Yeah,
wow,
it's me.
You wasted no time.
In what? Making fun of Derek?
Insulting and making fun
of Derek. I wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just, it's all in good fun.
We said before the show we'd make fun of him.
Sorry, Derek.
Even though he is under the weather, we're still going to make fun of him, buddy. Sorry, not sorry.
So, no mercy.
Emma is co-hosting, filling in today, as she has done in the past. Chris Kiefer there, our producer. That's what
Hello.
It's called. Producer slash
eel
podcast.
Eater.
King
slash what?
Eel eater. He's over there eating eels.
I didn't say I ate them. I just witnessed them being eaten.
Yeah, that's a little off-air convo we had about food that I hate. And then somehow eels came into the conversation.
I had a roommate who used to eat eels in a can. He's from Taiwan. It's a delicacy there, apparently.
The electric eels?
No, they were little. Maybe baby eels? I don't know.
So basically, they just look like giant worms.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's gross.
Eat them with chopsticks.
Okay.
I don't believe I ever tried them. I might have had a wild hair one day and tried them, but I don't remember.
I tend to stay away. That was at 1-9 at the frat party. No, yeah, I tend to shy away from a weird food. We were talking about
in zucchini.
Chicken livers and pickled pig lips. I just not going to.
And tomatoes.
And yeah, tomatoes.
Really normal foods.
Weird food. I don't like that stuff either.
It's okay, Brad.
Anyway, so, yeah, we do hope Derek gets better, but we'll carry on without him here today. What's been up with you, Emma? You haven't been in here as a co-host lately.
I know. I've just been really busy, saving the world through my reporting.
Oh, okay. Saving small children through your education reporting.
Just saving animals.
Oh, really?
The earth.
Yeah, what happened with
pretty much everything.
By the way, and I wasn't here, but I think it was John Pitts that tweeted something about we helped somebody, some people here at the Journal helped a cat
Get their dog. Yeah, I don't know what the whole story there was.
I've not
I
heard
saw
this.
That on Twitter. Or Leslie Chris posted something on Facebook saying, I found this dog. It's not with an owner. Is this anybody's dog? And then I think somehow we helped those people.
We helped the owners find their pet.
Find their dog.
So yay us.
See?
We'll have to get Leslie on to tell
Saving
the full
world.
Story.
Saving the world.
One pet at a time.
There we go.
One pet at a time.
Yes. Okay, so speaking of food, we've got Jenna Parsons on the show later today.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the food section. We've got Dennis Sid talk about the Elvis Birthplace Trail. Had the ribbon cutting officially yesterday. It's been complete now for a few days, but it's all done. Looks nice. And then we get to talk about Demon Chipmunks with Bobby Harrison.
That sounds fun.
I'm just going to leave it at that, and you have to keep listening.
Stay tuned.
To figure out what exactly I mean by demon chipmunk. So I think I have some of those in my attic.
Is that what we saved?
Huh?
Is that the pet we saved?
No, we kill those. You kill the demon chipmunks, Chris, before they kill you.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Yeah, demon chipmunks don't have rights.
Yeah.
they're in cahoots with
They're below zombies in the totem pole.
Yeah.
They're in cahoots with the white rabbit from Monty Python. So.
Ooh.
Yeah. Emma, you've seen that movie?
I've seen Monty Python, yes.
Okay, and the Holy Grail?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, I'll not start quoting the movie, because if I do, it won't stop.
Could be fun.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
I can't do a British accent, so it would be really bad.
Try it. I want to hear. I want to hear Brad's British accent.
My kids have told me.
I think
me,
we just called your bluff, Brad.
My kids have told me how bad my accent is.
That's okay.
My British accent.
We're all friends here.
Are we?
Well, I thought we were, but now I guess I'm questioning.
Well, we are, but I'm talking about the people listening.
Silently
judging me in their heads. Because I know you are people. I know it.
Just one line.
That rabbit's dynamite. See, that's not a very good accent. Not very good at all.
You be the judge. Email us at memo@journalin.com. Let us know what you think of Brad's Cockney accent.
Cockney accent. All right, so we've got a good show. We've got a full show today, so I reckon we ought to get to it, Emma.
Yep, let's do it.
Before we move on, let's remind you that today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, formerly known as Palmer's. The locally owned grocery store still offers high quality selection, great customer service, and low prices. Visit Shoppers Value Foods on East Main. All right, let's welcome in business reporter Dennis Sid. Dennis, how are you today, sir?
I'm fine. Good morning. It's hot.
Yes, it is.
A great day for walking or cycling down the Elvis Birthplace Trail.
Speaking of which, Dennis.
Yes.
You had a story in today's journal about that. They had the official ribbon-cutting ceremony yesterday. And, of course, they've recently completed the project, a two-year project. And so you now it looks really nice, of course. And you got the bike lanes and the fresh black top and the sidewalk and all that good stuff. It doesn't seem like it took 2 years, Dennis, but then again, I don't own a business downtown.
Right, I was going to say, if you're a business downtown or along East Main Street, they'll tell you it took all of 2 years. It was a 20-month project, started officially, I guess, September of 2014.
Yeah. And it's about a mile and a half stretch, 2 mile stretch.
Roughly, if you're talking like right at around Reed's, and then if you go straight to the birthplace, according to MapQuest, anyway.
Okay.
I haven't actually walked it or cycled it.
Yeah, me either. Yeah. And I'm not going to, at least not this time of year. And maybe we'll see that more of that later on. I don't know. But obviously, one of the big goals of this was to make it a more, I guess, as Jason Shulton, the mayor, would put it, more of a connected city, whatever you want to call it, people using the sidewalk between downtown and the birthplace and the bike lanes they have now. And so people seem to believe that that's exactly what's going to happen. You don't really know until it's done, but right. Everybody seemed pretty positive yesterday about it.
Yeah, like you said, the goal was to kind of slow down the traffic, at least through downtown, since it's narrowed to three lanes. And just to, you know, give people a look around and say, hey, we have these restaurants, boutiques on the area, not just off Main Street, but in all of downtown. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it widens back out as you go to East Main. You know, they widen the bridges. You have a turn lane, a much-needed turn lane in East Tupelo on East Main Street. I mean, that businesses there will tell you, yeah, we've been needing that for a while. So it was a, you know, a multi-phase project, and it took more than 10 years of planning, you know, from the initial stages of talking about what we want to do or what the city wanted to do. And it's done. There's a few minor things to, you know, touch up on, but everything's drivable. They just have a few minor things to take care of, but it's there.
I'm curious about the bike lanes and how often those will get used. You spoke with Tiffany Franks, who owns a Crave downtown, delicious food and coffee there, by the way. And she also rents bikes now.
She's going to start it probably tomorrow, she said. She and her husband, Brad, they bought three men's bikes, three women's bikes, and a couple of junior bikes for, you know, the wee riders or the smaller riders.
Sure.
Just to kind of test it out to see what interest there may be. Because you have a lot of tourists in town who like to do that thing, and residents, too. They may want to, you know, ride around and see what it's like. The new bike lanes and... new sidewalks, and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, you know, you see a lot of cities, people are riding their bikes to work and stuff, and it's more green. I don't think that's caught on in Tupelo yet or in a lot of other southern cities, but it could.
We're making an effort.
It could. Yeah. It's just, again, this time of year, I'm going to choose my AC in the car. It's going to heat indices over 100. I'm not riding a bike anywhere. I'm sorry. But come fall now, it'd be really pleasant to do that.
Fall, spring, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, $11.5 million project is the continuing, if you want to call it revitalization at this point. It's been revitalized downtown for a while, but anybody who lived here back in the 90s may remember what they did back then. And so really, it's just a really nice, I mean, it's just it looks really good, Dennis.
Yeah, I mean the landscaping, the crosswalks. By the way, don't if you're driving a car, don't, you know, push yourself into the crosswalk, because again, that's for people to walk across. And just because you try to get closer to the light doesn't mean it's going to trigger the light. The actual trigger is a little further back. So
I gotcha.
Just put a little reminder out there from our downtown folks.
Going back to the bicycle lanes, explain a little bit how that works, because a lot of people will see that and maybe, you know, if they're not familiar with it.
You know, you'll see a bicycle logo and probably around a 3-foot wide stripe lane between the main road and the sidewalk. But if you're going east on Main, you'll notice right past the railroad tracks and all the way to Elizabeth, suddenly that 3-foot bicycle lane becomes, you know, your standard lane with the bicycle logo in the middle. And that doesn't mean that it's a giant bike lane. It's a shared lane. Both cars and bikes can use that lane.
That lane's for the Peloton. A little Tour de France reference there.
Once you get past Elizabeth, you know, it narrows back to your normal 3-foot wide lane, bicycle lane. But that is a shared road. You know, there is a time there, dude, can I drive down through this lane? Can I not? You can. Just be aware of bicycles. And that'll be something, too, that people who park downtown, you know, just look and make sure there's not a bike in the bike lane next to you. Don't open your door and,
That could
it's worse for the rider, you know. Yeah. It's not good for your car either, but just be aware.
The business owners I mentioned earlier didn't feel like 2 years to me, but obviously to the business owners it felt like probably 10 years. But people you've talked to, they feel like it's worth it and it's going to pay off in the long run
for
them.
Well, you know, they everybody hopes it pays off in the long run because, you know, they had to go through all this construction and, you know, clearly many businesses were affected because if you cut off parking and you cut off the lanes, then, you know, people don't like to walk very far. I mean, just think of all the hovering cars in the Walmart parking lot. I mean, downtown. I mean, there's parking downtown. You can find it, but people like that front door parking. Yeah. So that did affect a lot of businesses, and you know, many will tell you how they feel about it. But everybody is happy that it's done, of course.
Right.
And they're hopeful that, hey, you know, it looks great. Everything's open. We have parking spaces. Come downtown. Our doors are open. And, you know, you've got, you know, a couple more restaurants opening soon, mm-hmm. you know, with Vaz's Bistro and Anthony's Neapolitan Pizza. Mm-hmm. And, you know, probably more shops. You know, we're seeing probably more activity downtown. In the 12 years I've been here, I haven't seen this much going on, which is good.
It's a good time to be alive in Tupelo.
And in air conditioning.
Yes. All right. Good stuff. Dennis, find his story in today's journal or djournal.com. On Twitter, Dennis can be found at Dennis Sid. Sid is S-E-I-D.
That's right. Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S.
Yeah, not Denise. Thank you, Dennis. And be sure to look for the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself and Gene Phelps. New episodes air every Wednesday. You can watch the webcast live at around 11 a.m. at djournal.com. The podcast version drops later in the day. You can listen to it for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. So look for a new episode of Prep Rally today. And Ole Miss and MSU fans, check out the Double Coverage podcast. Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and MSU reporter Logan Lowry release a new episode each Thursday afternoon in which they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and the Rebels. You can listen to that for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com. No Double Coverage this week as the guys are taking a little bit of a break. And also, check out the Daily Journal's website. We're excited to announce a change on the website that will allow more people to consume as much of our content as they want. We've recently removed our paywall, and djournal.com is now free from the first click to the last. We also have increased our multimedia content by launching new products ranging from videos to webcasts and, of course, podcasts like this one. The website complements our print product, the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. So visit djournal.com to stay informed on the latest news in Northeast Mississippi. There's no limit to what you can do at djournal.com, so come and stay a while and leave informed about the communities we serve. All right, let's go down to Jackson, talk with Bobby Harrison. He's trying to kill a demon chipmunk down there or something. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, Brad, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. I like what they've turned this. Of course, people probably familiar with this past legislative session. Some Democrats wanted some bills read aloud, basically to filibuster, so they were read aloud by a speaking program, whatever you call it.
Reading application,
there you go, and read at a very high speed to where it's pretty much unintelligible to the human ear, and people just took to calling it the demon chipmunk, which, you know, I don't know exactly what that sounds like, but there you go. And yesterday they had a hearing before the Mississippi Supreme Court, Bobby. The state's highest court. I like the way you intro'd the story, your lead, kind of setting the scene of this, you know, this very dignified setting, and they're talking about demon chipmunks.
That's right. You had these justices and distinguished highest court in the state. You know, a lot of pomp and circumstance, and they kept on getting back to Demon Chipmunk, and so that was interesting. And that term, I mean, I don't know who coined that term. I think it was somebody on Twitter, but it perfectly describes. I mean, I'm not sure. I never thought about what a Demon Chipmunk would sound like until. That term was associated with the reading application, and it's a perfect description of what the reading application sounds like on I guess what's the highest level. I mean,
I guess if Alvin from Alvin and the Chipmunks became possessed or something, that's what you got right there.
That's right, maybe the range.
Can you give us a sample, Bobby?
No, I can't. I'm from South Mississippi. I can't talk that high or that fast.
So anyway, they had arguments before the court yesterday. Philip Gunn was kind of, the person, the House Speaker, the target of the Democrats' ire for doing this. So what were the arguments from either side there, Bobby?
Well, you know, actually they were talking about pretty serious stuff in the midst of all the talk about Demon Chipmunk. The state constitution, going back to 1890, gives any member the right to have a bill read before the final vote. And, you know, most people think that was actually put in the constitution in 1890 in a time when, you know, you had more people who couldn't read. But then, as one of the justices pointed out, in court here, Leslie King from the Central District pointed out that, you know, the 1890 Constitution actually had a literacy test in it to be you had to pass a literacy test to be an elector. And one of the qualifications to be a legislator was to be an elector. So presumably they could read, but who knows. But in recent years, it's been used as sort of a filibuster tactic to slow down the process when one side was upset about something. And the speaker, Speaker Gunn, started reading application been used for a while, but this is the first time it's been used on this very high setting. And Jay Hughes, who's not involved in slowing down the process, but he, the freshman from Oxford, Democrat, filed a temporary restraint order saying that it was a violation of the Constitution and making a mockery of the process to be reading at this level, and it ended up before the Supreme Court yesterday. And the arguments were on the speaker's side was that the judiciary doesn't get involved in the internal workings of the legislature. And in addition, the argument by Mike Wallace, who Jackson attorney, very prominent attorney, who was representing the speaker, was that he was meeting the constitutional mandate by having the bill read, regardless of the speed. And, you know, of course, the argument on the other side was this was, you know, making a mockery of the process and was not constitutional because, you know, you couldn't. I think any reasonable person would come to the conclusion if they heard the audio is that you could not understand what was being read.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the courts, you know, ironically, the courts didn't want to hear the audio.
Yeah, they didn't.
It wasn't played, but it was just talked about. But, you know, in the past, the Supreme Court has been reluctant to kind of get in the internal business of the legislature. But I mean, they were the speaker's side had some tough questions yesterday. You know, saying, you know, what, you know, gave the, for instance, if what the leadership decided they were going to close the doors to the capital to the legislature and operate in executive session, could the judiciary not get involved at that point in time? So, So there's some important issues, and it'd probably take a while before the court rules. And it's, you know, if they do rule on the Hughes and the Democrat side, it does open the issue of, you know, how do they frame that, you know,
yeah,
because it's going to be subjective. I think most people could come to a reasonable conclusion of what's understandable, but there is that issue of, you know, how do you frame an order to say slow down the reading so everybody can understand it, but at the same time read it fast enough to kind of get your business done.
Right. And is it one of those cases where it's, you know, the letter of the law versus the spirit of the law kind of thing, or is it more complicated than that?
I think that's part of it. And one thing that came out, you know, which I didn't know until this court hearing yesterday, Michael Randolph, a justice from South Mississippi, pointed this out. That, you know, as I said, this put in the Constitution, and, you know, and it was in this section was in the original Constitution, 1890, when, you know, there was a thought that, you know, maybe people couldn't read, or that, you know, there was maybe only one copy of an actual bill. You didn't have, you know, the internet. You didn't have all the bills on the computer system, or you didn't have, you know, big copy machines that can make, you know, literally hundreds of copies in a very short time. So there was, in a lot of instances, there was only one bill for the legislature to see and to debate. So reading the bill was more important. But as Randolph pointed out, in I think it was 1990, that section of the Constitution was amended. But in amending the Constitution, the choice was made to not take out the actual requirement that the bills had to be read upon the request of the legislature. So as late as 1990, they were tinkering with this section of the Constitution, but they weren't taking that out. So I found that pretty interesting.
Huh. Okay. Well. So you said it could be a while before they rule on this, Bobby. What happens next?
I would think so. I mean, I would think I would guess sometime before the start of the next session. But I wouldn't think the ruling would come.
Right. Okay.
Immediately. Yeah.
Okay. Well, y'all can read more about it in today's journal or at djournal.com. Read all you ever wanted to know about demon chipmunks, Bobby. Appreciate your time, man.
All right. Thank y'all.
Yeah. Hey, be sure to watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Bobby will provide commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. You can watch live on Monday afternoons at 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. The 2016 legislative session is now over, but Bobby will continue to provide perspective about the news coming out of the state capitol. Time now for today's news memo, and for more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. Anyone who wants to host a protest or other gathering on the lawn of the Lee County Courthouse in Tupelo now will have to get a city permit. Until this week, county property had separate rules for protests and demonstrations. Groups were able to assemble there without going through a permitting process. County officials announced the change this week. They cited a 2013 state law that says city ordinances apply in the absence of a county ordinance. Since the early 1980s, Tupelo has required anyone hosting a parade, procession, or public demonstration to get a permit from the police chief. Meanwhile, two protests that had been planned for July 30th do not appear likely to happen. The city declined to issue Stand Up Mississippi a permit for a two-mile march through the city. It cited logistical details but said it would work with the organizers for an alternate location. Meanwhile, the Mississippi League of the South told Lee County Sheriff Jim Johnson it had canceled its event that was to be held that day at the courthouse lawn.
State Representative Jay Hughes will host a two-day education conference in Jackson on Friday and Saturday. The Oxford Democrat said he wants to gather input from teachers on what can be done to improve the classroom experience without spending money. The event will be at the Jackson Convention Center and will feature panel discussions, breakout sessions, and keynote speakers. Former Governor William Winter and former National Teacher of the Year Ron Clark will be among the speakers. Hughes said he closed enrollment for the conference at 1,500 signups.
A large community storm shelter to be placed near Saltillo's City Hall likely will be completed in August. The $47,000 shelter will house up to 96 people. Officials had hoped it would be in place by mid-April. It was delayed because the manufacturer was backed up with other orders. The bulk of the funding for the project will come from a grant from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. The city's matching funds will be $11,695.
AIA Countertops has begun hiring 60 workers for its new plant in Baldwin. The plant will be located in the Harry A. Martin North Lee Industrial Complex. AIA is a division of Indiana-based Patrick Industries. Its business is primarily related to the RV industry. AIA has two facilities in Syracuse, Indiana, and another in California. Chief Operating Officer Jeff Rodino said the hiring process will take place over the next 30 days.
The Together Tupelo workshop at the Link Center will be held on Tuesday, July 26th. The wrong date for the event was given on Monday's show. Sorry. The workshop on race relations is designed to give people the tools necessary to talk about divisive topics. It will be held from 6:30 to 8 p.m.
A Renaissance Bank location in Okolona was robbed on Tuesday, and authorities are searching for suspects. The suspects entered the bank at about 10:21 a.m. and demanded cash. Tellers complied, and the robbers left the bank headed south on Highway 145A. Authorities are looking for a gray or silver small car they believe to be a Nissan Maxima. Chickasaw County Sheriff James Myers said the dye pack exploded, so at least one of the suspects was covered in red dye. No one at the bank was hurt in Tuesday's robbery. Okay, we want to remind you that today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, a locally owned grocery store on East Main Street. The store has recently changed its name from Palmer's, but the owners and employees haven't changed. Damon Palmer and his brother Jason are the third generation owners of the grocery store that was founded in 1957. And I have to say, I'm a big fan of the former Palmer's, Shoppers Value Foods. I used to shop there all the time when I lived in the area, so it's a good place to be.
And speaking of Damon Palmer, he just won a golf tournament yesterday over in Oxford. Oh, really? It was called the Trustmark Invitational. We had a story about it in today's journal, but basically it's a tournament kind of showcasing some of the state's top PGA club professionals and top amateurs. So, they had that over in Oxford, and he won by like 7 strokes. So good job, Damon Palmer.
More than a grocer.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can go shop at Shoppers Value and talk golf with Damon Palmer.
Yeah.
All right. And so they have teamed up with last year's Grocery Wholesaler of the Year and decided to go with their Cost Plus program. The store now sells its groceries 10% over cost. That's allowed them to add more variety, especially in the meat, produce, and dairy departments. They also did some changes to the interior, new signs, better parking. So visit Shoppers Value Foods for high quality selection, great customer service, low prices, and some golf talk.
There you go.
Now we have Jenna Parsons here to talk about this week's food section. Hey, Jenna.
Good morning. How are you, Emma?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so you did a story about a restaurant in Algoma called Seafood Junction, and it looks like it's pretty delicious. A buffet is the most popular item on the menu. So tell us a little bit about this place.
I actually went there about 7 or 8 years ago. They were the first restaurant in Mississippi to start using a totally trans fat-free cooking oil when they fried their foods. And so that was something that was phenomenal. Nobody else was doing it, and the customers really liked it. But I hadn't actually done a story on the restaurant itself. Mm-hmm. And since the time that I was there last, it's changed owners. The people that have it now bought it in 2010. And it's Mike and Teresa Montgomery and their daughter Jill and her husband Scott Foster. And none of them had been in the restaurant business, but they just decided to do this and apparently have been very successful. They have between 12 and 1,400 people every weekend that come and eat with them. And just to give you an idea, Teresa told me the population of Algoma is 590.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So people are coming from all over.
They're coming from all over, and they're coming from the Tanglefoot Trail. The bike riders will park their bikes there. Or park their cars there and then drive their bikes to Houston or New Albany and back and then come and eat with them. But I got there to do the interview at 4 o'clock on a Thursday, and the restaurant was not to open until 5. And when I got there, there were people in the parking lot. There were people already wandering in, staking out their tables. And everybody that came in, Teresa and Jill knew. They spoke to them and said, "We've got your table ready. How many y'all gonna have tonight?" I mean, this is a place for regulars.
Wow, that's crazy that people got there early. An hour early.
They do. Hey. And the buffet, it's got 31 items on it, but you can order off the menu. There are a few things that aren't on the buffet that are on the menu, like ribeye steaks and charbroiled chicken and crab legs. But the buffet is baked fish, fried fish, broiled fish, chicken, shrimp, boiled shrimp, oysters, I mean, you name it, all the sides, macaroni and cheese. They even have chicken spaghetti, and it's a kid-friendly restaurant.
They
have a place for kids to play and a kid's menu, so.
So have you eaten there? Have you tried the food?
No, you know, we go to these restaurants, and I don't eat. I'm busy interviewing,
right.
But a lot of times the photographer, the photographer who hangs back to take the photos, or they'll make a plate of food and then they can't sell it because it's been sitting there for 10 minutes. And so I think the photographers often try the food and tell me how delicious it is. But with that many people showing up every week, it's got to be good. And they're good people.
Great. Well, it sounds delicious. And so then you interviewed a cook of the week this week, Kylie Boring.
Kylie was Kylie Coleman when she worked at the Journal several years ago.
Okay.
She was in our advertising department. And when Kylie used to, we would have potluck lunches and meals here. And you didn't want to go behind Kylie with whatever she had brought, because it was always just, well, she used to make her marinated olives, and that's one of the dishes that she made for us. But everything that she made, it was just, not only was it good and pretty, but just different. She came up with different ways to put things together, and she's still doing that today. Her presentation is beautiful, and I mentioned that she wouldn't want to be called a foodie, but she is. What I did not mention is when her six-year-old son was a baby, she made all of his baby food, and whatever they were having, she would puree, and he would eat it because she wanted him to eat the way that they ate. And so if they had, you know, some sort of squash dish, she would puree it, and that's what he would have. Or if she roasted sweet potatoes, she would puree, and that's what he would have. And that's the way he ate until he got to be, not sure how old he was, maybe 3 or 4, and he went through a stage where he didn't want anything but beef tenderloin filet. And so that's all he ate. Well, then he got tired of that, and all he would eat was chicken, which he called white steak. And now, to her horror, he is going through a phase where he will only eat hot dogs and pizza, I think. But she knows he'll come back around.
Yeah, he'll go back to his roots. Yes. Hopefully just not in pureed form.
Right, right.
Great. Well, it sounds, everything in your story sounds delicious. I was reading it earlier and I was starting to get
hungry. Oh, she's got some great recipes, yeah.
Okay, and then your column is about oven canned tomatoes. So what exactly is an oven canned tomato?
Well,
I can't say I've ever
say,
heard of it before.
I know I'm going to get phone calls, because any extension person you talk to, any canning book will say that the only two ways that you should put up tomatoes to avoid botulism is a hot water bath or pressure canning. And I get that, but I am not going to argue with ways that have been done for 100 years, and they have been done this way. And the difference is, when you oven can, you just simply load a jar with the tomatoes and a little bit of sugar and salt, put sealed rings and tops on them, and then you put them in the oven and you bake them for a couple of hours, in no water, just the cans of tomatoes, the jars of tomatoes. Then you turn off the oven and leave them overnight. And the reason that this woman, Nobe Gunner, started oven canning is because one year she cooked a batch of tomatoes and canned them, and there was something bad in the tomatoes. So mm-hmm. she lost everything she had canned. She lost 2 dozen jars of tomatoes. And she was mentioning this to someone who said, I've got a recipe where you can them in the oven. And that way, if there is something bad in a tomato, you mm-hmm. only lose one jar. You don't lose the whole batch. So she started doing this 10 years ago, and this is the way she's been doing them. She's given the recipe to tons of people, and they have had no problems canning this way and being able to use the tomatoes 2 or 3 years down the road.
Wow.
Yeah.
So have you tried this method?
I have not, but I was talking with our editorial page editor, Joe Rutherford, earlier, and we're both going to try it. I mean, even if we just try 1 or 2 jars, what if we lost?
Yeah,
one or exactly. 2 jars.
Huh.
So, and also, in the heat of the summer, the last thing you want is to be in the kitchen over hot boiling water, and that's what it takes to do a pressure canning or a hot water bath. So I'm going to give it a shot.
Awesome. Well, you'll have to let us know how it works out.
Or you could try it yourself.
I could.
Y'all have a garden, don't you?
We do have a garden, and I could try it, but it would be more likely that my husband would try it.
Well, I've got tons of jars, so because people give me canned goods all the time. Mm-hmm. So I will provide the jars and some clean lids, and you can try it. And we'll try it together and see.
And we'll see what happens.
And then we'll share with Brad and Chris. Or I know,
maybe.
I know, Brad, don't tell
I
me.
Don't.
You don't eat tomatoes. Never
Brad,
mind.
You don't eat tomatoes?
Brad doesn't eat squat.
They're gross.
Are you going through a hot dog pizza phase?
Well, been through it since I was 4.
Yeah. It's a really long phase.
I can eat those every day. I told people I can eat pizza every day if it's good pizza.
I have to agree. I think I could too.
They include most of the major food groups. Pizza does.
Well, maybe if you put pineapple on it.
Yeah, see, pineapple needs to be served cold. That's a whole other discussion.
Oh, Brad.
All right. Well, we will try it out and we'll come back and give a full report on how it went. Okay. Thanks, Jenna.
Thank you.
All right. I need to remind y'all once again that today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, where you can get the ingredients for the recipes in today's food section, by the way. The Palmer brothers have worked hard on improving every area of the store to make customers' experiences even better than before and to save them money on quality name brand products. Visit the locally owned grocery store on East Main Street. You'll love the look, love the prices, and get helped by the same people you knew at Palmer's. And that is it for today's memo. Thank you, Emma, for so capably filling in for Derek Russell.
Thank you. Thank you.
If he's good not, to be here. If he's not feeling well Thursday, I guess he'll just have to come back.
Yeah.
I could.
Do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not saying I want Derek to remain ill, but I don't mind having Emma in here either. I'm just saying.
Got it.
Derek,
got it.
If you're listening.
Get
take,
well, but not.
Take your time.
Get well, but not too fast.
Don't rush it back.
I kid. You can find us on Twitter at DJournalMemo. You can listen to us a variety of ways for free in iTunes, any of the podcast apps. If you're not an iPhone user, you got Satchel, you got Player.fm, some of those type of apps. Listen to us on your browser if you want at memo.djournal.com. Of course, for all the news, sports, entertainment, and everything else going on in Northeast Mississippi. For the latest on those things, visit djournal.com or pick up a copy of your daily journal. And the journal is on Twitter at djournalnow. I'm on Twitter at Brad Locke. Emma is on Twitter at E.M. Crawford Kent. Right. Mm-hmm. Chris at Chris Kiefer.
That's it.
K-I-E-F-F-E-R.
Nailed it.
Not K-E-I.
Follow us all.
If it was K-E-I, it'd be Kiefer, right?
Yeah, but I before E except F or C. But this is a K, so follow the rules.
That's right, isn't it? Well, if it was, well, no, Chiefer, you got the H between the C.
Yeah. It'd
still be I-E. Chiefer. Okay. But we'll be back tomorrow. Me and somebody will be in the other chair. So have a great Wednesday.